Two of Hutton's favourite holidays are today, Intergalactic Burrito Day and the Pan Bubble Chocolate Mousse or Chocolate Substitute Mousse Day. Both fall on the 3rd of April and the Huttonaires love to get involved. So it's a breakfast burrito or chocolate hazelnut mousse on toast to get things underway. Hutton Coffee are getting into the spirit with lots of chocolate-based drinks and, not wanting to be left out, McThargoids have introduced the Spicy Beef Burrito McStiffy. There are stands all along the parade and a very long queue outside of Cubicle 3 with purveyors of savoury and sweet treats walking up and down trying to tempt the hapless queuers to indulge in one last treat before they brave the toxic hinterland of Hutton's infamous lavatory. The studio is festooned with tinfoil wrappings and pudding cups. Radio presenters snore loudly as they take time to digest the day's comestibles. Then an alarm sounds and everyone snaps to full wakefulness. They look at one another and realise that it's time. One of them manages to slouch forward towards the microphone. He presses a chubby digit, by which I mean a finger, into the control pad and says,
"Our mics are live." Good evening and welcome to this week's show. Only a little late. I'm Sandy Crevis and I'm sticking to sausages rather than those burritos.
I'm Wilma Fingerdoo and I can't feel my face after that extra spicy burrito McStiffy.
I'm Mia Harkness and I have been in a sugar coma.
I'm Norma Snockers. I've been dipping chocolate mousse from a chocolate bowl with a chocolate spoon. And now I feel a bit sick.
I'm Mike Rochburns, and I've been eating some of those little chocolates from the box over by Mooncake. They smell a bit funny, but they taste weird. But hey, it's free chocolate.
I think we'd better get to the headlines before anybody else gets hungry again. Definite questions require definite answers.
Nuisance noisy neighbours.
Social climbers club.
Sandy works on his sausage recipe.
And I amuse myself by reading about things that happened in the BGS.
Regular listeners will know that Hutton does not often delve into the murky world of speculation and rumour, preferring that all our news is solidly based upon fact. But sometimes, there's no real choice. Permit-locked systems and areas. Speculation has been recently revived about Polaris, Lave 2 and Col 70. Specifically, why are they locked? What's so special about these three? Do they hold hidden treasures, or are they just a pain in the flight suit for explorers and fleet carrier owners? The Pilots Federation has, as always, been staunchly silent on the subject, and even when a representative has been cornered and the question is pressed upon them, they have been known to point out the window, say, "Look, a three-headed monkey," and then try to blend into the wallpaper and pretend they're not in the room. This level of evasiveness has in itself led to speculation about why they won't answer questions about the speculation. Have they forgotten where they put the key? Or are they just too embarrassed to admit it? Or perhaps they've locked themselves out of those areas and all the documents about why are still locked in there, along with the keys and their shopping list for the weekend? Or is it that Commander Braben is playing a gigantic game of hide and seek and is still located in one of them with a blanket over his head, counting down from 100 in Thargoid? If you've ever tried this, you'll know why he has to rest his vocal cords for a month or so after each number. Lave 2 has, of course, been long suspected to be a retirement home for authors, where they can sit in a circle around the fire fueled by their remaindered books and talk about how it was all better back in their day. And the permit lock means that they're not being bothered by any of the goings-on in the galaxy. And, of course, the galaxy is not being bothered by them. So, win-win, we think. And Polaris? Well, Galactic Mega Corporation Slush Fund Depository, obviously.
This week, things have been getting noisy. We're not talking a little bit loud, like, use your indoor voice. Not even, would you keep it down loud? Nope, not even that. Nope, this is more of a commander mining an asteroid which you are currently inhabiting. But who is responsible for this? Well, the Pilots Federation state it to be an operation glitch, but the Hutton newsroom knows better. We blame Commander Little Grey. He did it, it's his fault. Yes, his obsession with all things sound just got out of hand. It started with a modest comms array on his ASP. Everyone's seen it sticking out, but no one minded that now and again. We even allowed him access to the Hutton radio antenna. But when he started to get into building a full-size comms array larger than Hutton itself, we started to worry. As his obsession for all things loud continued, things got bigger and bigger and louder and louder. But he's in his space. So who cares, you might ask?
But he's in space.
So who cares?
Indeed, just sort of like that. As we all know, sound does not travel in space. So indeed, no one cared until Little Grey saw fit to interface his massive comms array into a Coriolis toast rack. This noise, which a limited number of people refer to as music, caused such significant vibrations.
It's called bass. Bass.
Sorry, such significant bass that asps were seen bouncing off chairs and people vibrating off launching pads. It was only when dental filling started to be extracted with no dentist involved that Grey reluctantly decided to stop. Left with an array and not sure what to do with it, he opted to sell it and buy something a little smaller to fit his ASP instead.
The Hutton Outward Bound Social Climbers had to cancel their annual outing this week when a planned delivery of essential supplies failed to materialise. The commander contracted to deliver 2 tons of survival equipment to the orbital from Patterson Enterprise in Sirius in time for the intrepid climbers to depart for planets far, far from home. Well, that was the plan. But as Robert Burns said, gin a body, meet a body, come and do the eye. Gin a body, kiss a body, need a body cry. Sorry, wrong quote. My love is like a red, red rose that's newly sprung in June. Oh, my love's like a melody that's newly played in tune. No, that's not it. Oh, it was something about mice, men and gangs. Anyway, it was fitting for this situation. And just let that be a lesson to you. Sorry, the story. Well, the hapless commander looked in his cargo hold for the survival equipment. He searched up high, he searched down low, but where it went he did not know. He looked over here, he looked over there, he even looked beneath the stairs. He looked in the stern, he looked in the bow, and then he asked a passing cow. Cow answered, did you look up high, did you look down low? Try to remember, where did you go? It's not over here, it's not over there, did you put it away without taking care? Did you check the stern? Did you check the bow? I'll check cubicle 3. I'm going there now. Skullbeer replied, I searched up high, I searched down low. I was very drunk, so I do not know. I searched over here, I searched over there. I cannot find it. This is not fair. I searched the stern, I searched the bow. I did not search cubicle 3. It gives me the balk. He had to eventually, and with shuffling of feet, mumbling and staring at the ground, eventually claim, I didn't forget it, sir. The Momus Bog Spaniel ate it. No, we're a forgiving lot. We're not famous for bearing grudges. Except for you. You know who you are. So the commander was allowed to depart the station after being told to think about what he'd done, to book up his ideas if he ever wanted to get in his galaxy, and after being sent to explain to the climbers why he'd spoiled their day. He was directed to the gift shop on the way out, and is quite happy with his purchase of a Hutton mug. Now, we all know that you can't buy a Hutton mug. They must be earned. But watch the same way that little model of David, no, not that one, the 15-foot tall one with his kit off, that you buy in the museum shop, wasn't actually carved by Michelangelo. The Hutton mugs in the gift shop are representational, shall we say.
Cooking up a storm this week, Sandy Crevice, as he continued his culinary adventures, has moved on from his infamous or possibly famous sausage situation. Sandy wanted to attempt something a little bit more highbrow, something more suave, sophisticated, almost elegant. After some experiments on a theme, sausage supreme, sausage and mash, and sausage surprise, alas, no one enjoyed his sausage or the surprise, so, well, maybe Gusto the Clown enjoyed it? We don't know. Things were not going so well. He needed to think differently. Think out of the sausage-shaped box.
How can I make my sausage better?
He pondered out loud to worried-looking bystanders in the cafeteria. Then it hit him, literally, across the face, as the noon food fight occurred. This is a tradition that no one really knows why it started, but it had given Sandy a great idea. The sausage that slapped his face was no normal sausage, but a corn dog, a sausage wrapped in foodstuffs which we are reliably informed to be corn. Hence the name.
But why stop there?
Sandy declared with great excitement. After some time, the new culinary creation was complete. It was a sight to behold and consisted of the following items. If you want to cook this at home, get your pens and papers ready. It started, obviously, with a sausage, wrapped in bacon, wrapped in hash browns, sprinkled with cheese, wrapped in a tortilla, stuffed into a chicken, which was stuffed into a turkey, which was stuffed into a goose, stuffed into a honey badger, stuffed into a lamb, stuffed into an ostrich, which was then stuffed into a cow, then into an elephant, and then into a penis bird. Yes, it's a thing. Stuffed into a hauler, stuffed into an asp, docked on an outpost of a and the outpost inside of the Coriolis station, all perilously close to a black hole. For those following at home, a Coriolis station is estimated to weigh 2.81 gigatons. So following the concept of about 20 minutes per kilogram, it would, well, it was established it would take a very long time. When quizzed about the cooking time, Sandy responded with,
"Well, that's why we're going to have to deep fry it, of course." Mia!
I had myself muted and I couldn't find the unmute button. And it all went horribly wrong. Anyway,
Mary, a seam in sight.
Yes. The best laid plans of mice and men aft gang a glee, as Flossie would have said if we'd let her.
When
anyway,
a buddy meets a buddy.
Somebody coming through the ride. Right. Anyway, welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we review the developments in the 283 systems where Hutton has a presence, before going into a nice dark room and having a little screen to ourselves. Well, with 59 systems over the 60% influence threshold, there's not a lot to work with. But Epsilon Eridani is having a boom and an outbreak, and there's a drought on PSPF LF2. Ongoing investment is, well, it's ongoing in Wolf 359 and, of course, Barnard Star. Booms are in abundance in Midgecut, or Mingecut, Kokari, 36 Ophiuchi, where there's always a boom, and Epsilon Indy. But what does it all mean? Well, if you want to truck it, then truck medical supplies into... If you want to truck it, then truck medical supplies into Epsilon Eridani, or water to PSPF LF2. Same goes for mission running. If you want to shoot it, then find one of those colony systems with a lockdown or something, and then just wade in and give them a hand. And that's it for this week's Hutt and BGS bit.
Well,
yeah, I don't think anybody noticed that we were still writing it as we were going along.
It went really well right up until I get involved.
Yeah, the keen-eared listeners will have heard the tapping of typewriters during the reading of the headlines. This is known as the writing of the next headline.
Well, for those who had headlines, because Flossie didn't
have one. Sorry, keyboard is loud.
Flossie didn't have a headline at one point. I was going, oh shit, what am I going to call it? And then somebody put the answer in and I was like, that's okay then. Oh no.
Oh, what?
No. That was good. And very well read with the Dr. Seuss and the Robert Burns, Flossie. Very nice.
Mm.
You practice that, haven't you?
No.
You've done Robert Burns before, I know.
Oh, yeah. I've done Robert Burns before, yeah.
How many times have we ended up making you do Burns poems in this radio show?
I don't think it's been
not
that
enough.
No. not as often as we've done William Topaz McGonagall.
This is true. I'm possibly confusing things.
The world's worst poet. Oh, no, he's not. If you're a heathen, he's perfect for you. He's the world's worst poet. I shall send you some of his works later on.
That other bit with all the verses sounds more like Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was written to be like Dr. Seuss.
I just love them books.
Yeah, me too. It's actually quite funny, right, when you get started on it.
So can I mention the sausage wrapped in bacon, stuffed into a goose, stuffed into an elephant in the room?
You can do more than mention it. It's nearly cooked. You can try some in a minute.
So, which bit do you have a problem with? Because there's more than one.
Now, I know it's deep fried, but was it deep fried and battered? Did we establish that?
Whatever it was, I was just flying back to my fleet carrier, which was in Kakari from last week. And there's a war pending with the EDF. So I think if you want to shoot it, don't arse around in some of those colony systems. Get to Kakari tomorrow.
Yeah, again. Big whoop. We're in a war with the EDF. We were just out of a war with the EDF when I looked today.
No, that was a war with somebody else.
Yeah, because you were lower down. So there was a war with the faction in third. Presumably, well, you must have won it because now you've gone back up to 30-odd, 37-ish% influence.
That was the old truckers' bulletin last week.
Yeah, and now you're tied and thus into war with the EDF, which you need to win.
When I looked at it, we were at 50-something. So it's obviously happened after I've looked because, you know, I can only look at certain points through the day when nobody's watching me. And I was EDSM and not in ARA.
Yeah, Hutton Orbital Truckers Cooperative, Earth Defence Fleet, both at 37.2%, and war is pending. So.
Yep, that's a war. Yeah, well, yep, get over there and shoot them in the face. Nobody will notice. It's EDF. Oh, dear.
So do we have any space news?
We might have.
You've forgotten the all-important question, haven't you?
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was the last Wednesday of every month.
Ah! What was? Very well done. You know what happens on the last Wednesday of every month except January.
No, I don't. What does?
It's the Frontier live stream.
Oh, was it? Oh, cool. What was said in it?
I don't know. It was 2 weeks ago.
Oh. Mm. Well, was that a genuine question?
No.
Or do you want me to draw me?
No, we did it last week.
I could recount all of the stats that they were told about the Gutermeyer Corsair. But...
from memory. Rumor.
I think you'll find that some people are actually flying about in the Gutermeyer Corsair now. The press release ones are out.
Are they out or are they out for people to not talk about?
No, they're out. They're out. 1 o'clock today was the embargo thing.
Fine.
Yeah, Garnet has reported some sort of unveiling event, apparently.
Mm. Yeah. Sorry, yeah, just going back half the story. Naughty Body Wash is saying it was the honey badger that concerned him.
Yeah, that concerned me as well, Naughty Body Wash.
Yeah, but out of everything in there, I think it's more likely to be the Coriolis station that breaks your teeth.
Yeah, I don't know. Honey badgers can be a bit rough.
So can the Dutch sections of some Coriolis.
The bit that worried me about the honey badger was how they got it in there, because honey badgers will not go willingly.
It was tempted.
No, but you don't just kind of ask it nicely, do you? I mean, you need to make sure that it ceases to be first.
Have you ever seen honey? Yeah, that's the difficult part with honey badger.
You ask Amelia if you can borrow Steve and the cattle prod.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I want that cattle prod back.
Just don't give any specific details. Now, you probably don't want the cattle prod back after that.
No, you probably don't want Steve back after that.
Oh, we've got plenty of spare Steves.
Yeah, we can make a new one.
We can make a new one. Oh, poor Steve.
Ah, dear. So, do we have any space news?
We do.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I found some whilst you were talking.
Space news. That's all right, because I programmed the buttons for it while we were talking.
Yes, it's like we were flanneling for a reason or something.
Something like that, yes.
And in true style, we've posted things that we've not read first, but I saw the headline of several of them and thought, that sounds interesting. But you've got an advert instead.
Oh, okay. Right, so this
I haven't.
Is about,
it's scrolled.
I was mildly disappointed when it came out as a space war and not spice war.
Spice war. Wars over spice. But no, this is genuinely a space war. Russia and China are actively targeting Starlink, particularly over the Ukraine battlefield. Ukrainian forces are facing data outages because they're losing connection to Starlink. And it's unclear at the moment. I imagine it's through jamming that they're doing this rather than taking Starlink.
It does mention electronic warfare, so I would assume so.
That's kind of how it's done. Having deployed some ground systems in the past, we've had a few interesting requests before, and it's kind of obvious when someone's trying to do jamming with their with their equipment. Whenever they ask for multiple antennas to point the same direction, that's not something you normally do. No, normally, multiple antennas take multiple jobs in different directions. And it's either that or when they aren't actually interested in radio equipment, they just want waveguide with something in the kilowatts instead of the 10 to 100 watts range. So. It's kind of obvious when someone's building a weapon, so it happens is what I'm saying.
Should we be concerned about the copyrights of the name of that website?
Definitely not. It's called Newsletter Subscription. See, it's a big button there that says Newsletter Subscription. That's the name of the website.
Right.
When you name something as it's like daily news, you're not going to get in trouble for that. Anywho, but yeah, I just thought it was an interesting thought, but it's not the only thing we'll hear from Starlink today.
Ooh.
It's actually kind of less bad than it could have been, because one of the concerns when they were first putting Starlink out in the battlefield was that, I don't know if you've ever seen one, but they're fairly high power, fairly small devices, and that means they generate a lot of heat.
Mm.
And the actual Starlink ground station, the little diddy portable things, are very easy to spot on infrared, which makes them hot targets for incoming ordnance.
Nice.
So one way to declare war on them is on the ground, not just with jamming, but with them bombs. But thankfully, that doesn't seem to have been a major thing. So I think most of the Ukrainian forces are much happier with just being jammed.
The heat is a lot of heat-guided things. You're looking at flare from stuff like engines, which is probably significantly higher than
It's not that the heat-guided. It's that they're easily spotted and then called down from forward ops for artillery fire.
Right, I understand. I thought that was interesting how an interesting chain. You've had the modern change of internet from space, but now actually it's flicking back the other way. It's the exact opposite of GPS, where GPS was a military technology that became public. This was a public thing that's been
militarized
to a point of militarized. So it's just interesting how times have changed.
What you want is dial-up. Nobody's going to interfere with your dial-up.
I don't even know where to start with that statement.
By moving on to the next story.
Wise.
Let's get far away from Starlink. That's probably a good idea at this point.
Yeah.
Well, you can now have as far away from Starlink, but it will probably have adverts in it, just like the one you're looking at now. Amazon is going to do a Starlink. Allegedly, they are looking to launch 27 new satellites. Kuiper. That would have been a good word of the week, wouldn't it? They're going to launch 27 satellites, which is nowhere near as many as Starlink, but you got to start somewhere. But they're aiming for 3,000 satellites. But they've invested $10 billion since 2019 already. It's just mad.
What are they going to do with them?
Crash them into each other. exactly the same as Starlink. Kuiper is another full constellation satellite internet system. China's putting one up as well. Russia is looking at putting one up, I believe.
Yep.
And don't forget that each of these, up until the first Starlink launch, there were a couple of thousand active satellites in space total.
Mm-hmm.
Each of these multiple constellations is going to consist of tens of thousands of satellites.
Wow. So anybody who is an astronomer is going to really, really struggle to see anything.
You'd think.
Unless they all blow each other up.
No, that'd make it worse, not better. You can only actually see Starlink satellites, with a telescope, because they're too dim and too far away to see with the naked eye, but B, at dawn or dusk, right when they're close to the horizon, because they need to be lit by the light of the sun coming past the Earth. Once they're in the shadow, they're effectively invisible to visible light astronomy. Not so much the case with radio astronomy, unfortunately. They are noisy buggers.
You're by design, oddly enough.
Yeah, but they're meant to be quite targeted and quite narrow wave bands, and then not sticking to their wave bands.
Yeah. I suppose with optical astronomy as well, it's less the fact that you're going to see them in front of stuff than they'll still block stuff. You know? Even if the light's not on them, they'll stop when you see what's behind them.
Yeah, you tend to get streaks across the photographs because they're moving really, really fast compared to, stars.
Yeah,
and they can ruin data, but the bigger problem with that is that they ruin the detection of moving objects. So things like the asteroid spotting surveys,
yes,
because they are in fact moving objects in near Earth orbits. So they get a lot of false positives
or collision courses.
Yes. It looks like the first launches aren't actually going to be launched by Mr. Bezos. They're going to be launched using Atlas, which is a Boeing Lockheed Martin rocket. But eventually, they have booked to use Blue Origin to put their own satellites into space. So it's going to be an in-house venture at the end
of the day. So they're not using SpaceX?
Funny that, no. I imagine SpaceX probably won't want to do it. And I, because they're a private company, they
SpaceX will take money off anybody.
Yeah.
And don't forget.
Imagine SpaceX,
especially at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And don't forget that there's no guarantee of a successful launch.
Yeah, but also, can you imagine if Blue Origin had to go to SpaceX to launch their satellites? Just a PR coup from that.
Well, they're going to Boeing at the moment. I mean, has anybody checked if the door's going to fall off?
I know two people that probably wouldn't recommend Boeing for anything going into space.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was all. You will soon be a real consumer and be able to choose if you weren't an early adopter.
Mm.
I'm probably not going to choose any of it, but there we go, because I don't need it yet.
Latency is too high
from space.
But anything's better when you put space in front of it.
No, that's true.
Even news.
Even news. Speaking of which, who's next?
Someone is shooting for the moon.
No, they are not. They're going to put Hilux up there.
Oh yeah, I suppose Hilux. I was going to go for Corolla, but
guitar.
But Hilux is more likely to keep working on the moon.
That's a Hilux. Maybe a Land Cruiser.
No, that's a Land Cruiser front end. That is indeed. It's the sort of round headlights.
Mm-hmm.
With the rounded bumper around it.
If you want to see a Hilux, Google Somali technical.
Where they basically just PVA sand to it in the most ingenious camouflage ever. But yeah, this was just a Toyota are going for the moon and they're creating a manned rover. And it's obviously quite difficult to gauge size on this thing, but it looks enormous. How are they going to get it there? The Lunar Rover original, it was like this tubular frame type thing that was an electric motor and it all bolted together. But this thing is...
Yeah, but the LEM was pretty big. They've landed some fairly chunky stuff on the moon since then. Well, I say landed. They've impacted some fairly chunky stuff into the moon, some of it the right way up and some of it stayed the right way up since then.
Yeah, that is quite big looking, isn't it?
Well, again, it's quite hard to say. It could be that actually I'm scaling it, assuming that Toyota
it's the size of a little diddy hatchback.
It may well not be.
I think you'll find there's a planet in the background for scale.
Yeah, but it's not a banana, so it's no use.
It looks to me like it's at least van or I'd say probably truck size.
You've got to think that if it's going any distance and is it crewed or is it robotic?
It's crewed.
If it's crewed, you probably need space to stand up inside there.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get a sense of scale from that.
So this news story is actually about a GITAI company, whatever that says.
Okay.
Finalising a robotic arm that will be fitted to this thing.
And so you can turn round and give Earth the finger from the moon?
I guess so. I guess it's so you can poke things with a long stick. But this all comes down to the Artemis project that Japan are working on to get to the moon again. So... if I've read that right.
So this is a JAXA mission, which is the Japanese Space Agency, of Toyota, a Japanese company. And the company called GITAI, which sounds about as Japanese as it gets, is California-based.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me think it's an acronym rather than a...
No, it was founded and is currently chief exec by Sho Nakasone. Oh. And they have a Japanese subsidiary as well. So,
Okay.
But it's California based.
Yeah, it's technically an American company.
Possibly for tax reasons.
Possibly for tax reasons, maybe for import reasons now as well. Who knows?
Very possibly.
I could neither confirm nor deny, but they're making Japan great again.
Yes.
I imagine it's probably because California being where your Teslas and your other large software and...
There's plenty of old scrap around that people don't want anymore.
There's no way to talk about software.
And there's also the fact that you're... you'll also find that it's easier to get contracts if you're an American company. Because Artemis is NASA, isn't it?
Yep.
Pass.
So they probably want to give as much business as they can to an American company.
Yes.
And if you're an American, even if you're called Gitai.
Naughty Body Watch thinks it might be for national security reasons. I don't think there's any security in the nation of America at the moment. Sorry, getting a bit political there. Let's move on.
No, it might have a point. It's,
yeah, it'll be so they can take on government contracts.
You know.
Among other things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Space contracts on non-American companies is sort of a no-go. Yeah, you're not wrong there.
Yeah.
Especially if it's anything with any sort of military crossover, which a lot of the space stuff does have.
But so. Airbus, for our next story, have tried to do one better over Toyota.
No, they haven't.
They're shooting for Mars.
Airbus,
indeed. The Sky Crane returns almost. It's not quite, but the Sky Crane was such a cool idea. Can I just throw that out there for a minute? How brilliantly awesome was that?
Yes, it was.
I haven't read this story as in detail as the others, but I just thought this everything for having decades of we went to Mars and we had a little rover and it poodled about and then we didn't really care about it for a while. And then we had a helicopter and then people started going, well, why don't we put people there again? And now it just seems to be really in vogue again, Mars. So
Mars never went out of vogue.
No, Mars but, was...
Yeah, this isn't for people. This is for the ExoMars rover. Sorry, the Rosalind Franklin rover, which is part of the ExoMars mission.
Okay. So that looks like some kind of lander there.
Yeah, this is the lander for getting the rover onto the ground, because rovers are good at rolling around, but they're not so good at dropping from orbit, generally.
No.
It's not the primary design goal of a rover. Falling out of the sky?
No. Although they can do it. It's just
they often
afterwards.
Do.
Afterwards are normal issues.
Anything can be airdropped. Some things more than once.
Yes. You know what they really need to concentrate on building is a Cheyenne utility dropship.
Okay.
That would solve all their problems,
yes.
Really.
Fly the friendly skies.
Yeah. Is that the one from Aliens?
Yeah.
Because I remember it deploying a rover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It would solve all their problems.
Mm. Mm.
Oh, yeah.
EasyJet to Mars, says Puppy Watch. Yeah, but the problem is if you flew out to Mars but on EasyJet or Ryanair, they'd drop you off at Venus.
Mm-hmm.
Just to scroll down to the bottom of the page in what I believe to be one of the most bizarre statements made by the chief executive of the UK Space Agency. He said, "This is humanity defining science." What?
Yeah.
And the best opportunity to find if past life once existed on Mars.
Well, yeah.
Defining but... science doesn't make any sense.
No, of course it doesn't. He's a chief exec. He's not there to make sense. He's there to sound inspirational.
Mm-hmm.
Naughty Body Wash. By definition, yes. We are defining science. Yeah, that is what science is.
Yes. Yeah. It wasn't the sloths who decided what science was it?
That's you could argue science existed and we're discovering it. But
no,
they're really
scientific
sure.
discoveries rather than the concept of science.
Naughty Body Wash says humans came up with the definition, check the dictionary. Which is another fantastic human invention. That wasn't invented by the whales, was it? Or the honey badgers?
But you've got to wonder, before anybody wrote the first dictionary, did the word dictionary exist?
Bits of it did.
Or did they have to
define it?
Or did they have to discuss what they were going to call it and then write it down in itself so that people would know what it was when they looked it up in itself to find out what the thing that they were looking it up in was?
Naughty body wash. I think you're wrong about Mel Gibson. You have to go and watch Blackadder.
I was going to say,
Blackadder the Third.
Yeah, didn't Robbie Coltrane invent
it? It was Robbie Coltrane, wasn't
he? Yeah. Without checking, I'd imagine one's dictionary was something that you'd talk about as how the words a person knows. It's like, oh, your dictionary is...
No, it's vocabulary.
You're quite well furnished, yeah.
That's vocabulary.
Yeah, but I mean, at the time, one might have referred
like
to
that,
one's dictionary, I suppose.
I do like that phrase, though. Your dictionary is quite well furnished.
That's a very well-appointed dictionary you have that there, sir.
It's very well furnished.
Is it nearly time to expand our dictionary in a beautifully smooth segue into our section?
Do we have a word of the week?
No, we can't do it yet. We're finished. Space news. Enough of that
nonsense.
Allow me to repeat. Do we have a word of the week?
I told you the first time, yes, we do.
Oh, who's that grumpy sausage?
Ooh, sausages.
Don't want to talk about Sandy's sausage, not again.
Yeah. Sausage? Sorry, I'm going back to Blackadder there.
Yes, the word of the week is this
sausage?
Is zerts.
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 You almost have to spit it out. What does that mean, then?
It's a bit like my sausage, then.
All of... a food or drink with great speed to chug or scoff down.
And can you use it in a sentence, please?
You just watch me. When an alarm sounded, everyone zerted their beers, teas, hot dogs, and in one case, a 16-inch pizza before rushing to their ships.
Now, I'm sorry, but it does sound the opposite of to down.
Yes, you mean to sort of up with great speed.
Yeah.
It
sounds like you're
the etymology of this word. Where the hell has that come from?
I have no idea. It begins with an X, which is just weird to start with. That leads me to believe it may not have any etymology.
For those interested, the word spelling and meaning is coming across your screens right now in the form of a ticker tape headline.
Hooray!
Yes, I noted Zenzoob in the chat.
Zenzoob
also
Krill.
Talking about Blackadder.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, of course. Yeah. I think nobody probably uses a real, like, an actual dictionary now, except if you're someone like David Mitchell, maybe. So whenever you think of dictionaries, you only think of good old Blackadder. Mm. I'm anaspeptic, phrasmotic, even compunctious to have caused you such pericombobulations.
Yes.
What was the other word?
My most sincere contrifibularities.
Yeah. It's a common word down our way.
Yes. That was a bit, the whole kind of down our way bit was a bit kind of, this, he never talks like that. Oh, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
Really, yay, really good. I got my drop, by the way.
Oh, congratulations.
Unaware, there are drops for your spaceship.
I'm looking to see if I'll get anything else I need to eat.
Decorations. And I have just acquired the T7, which I still think is the most utilitarian-looking ship out of the lot.
The flying brick. Heed! The word is heed!
Nah,
it's a space lander, but let's face it.
It has a massive heed.
I guess it is the one that looks most like a truck.
Yeah, it's 20 trucker, like, yeah.
Mm. But I did like the fact that I got the same paint job for the Type 9 through the Twitch channel.
Yeah.
The Turbulence paint jobs, aren't they? And they're really nice paint jobs.
Oh, Turbulence paint jobs are great. I think it's the purple ones I've given away, isn't it?
No, it's the orange ones.
Was it the orange ones?
Orange and purple. They're both sort of stripey.
Yes, they're not sort of stripy. They're very stripy.
So stripy, there's stripes in them. Stripes, I've just noticed.
Striped.
We're going very Blackadder now.
It's stripier than a zebra who's a professor of stripes at Oxford University.
I feel we need to move this on again.
I feel we do. We're getting a little distracted. Let's get something more, a bit more factual involved. Space facts, lots of space facts that we want to know, need to know. Think from bottom straight to your brain. Being from bottom straight to your brain. Being from bottom straight to your brain. This week for Space Facts, we go from some of the highest density objects in the galaxy to some of the lowest. They're the spectacular subject of interstellar images, which astronomers keep making instead of photographing something actually useful. The colourful volumetric clouds of gas and dust, known as nebulae, and they're the perfect tourist destinations for hut and truckers, insofar as one doesn't so much orbit around them or land upon them as turn the wheel and fly right on through them. Fact number one. Nebulae are the least dense things in the galaxy, while still having a visible identifiable structure. A typical nebula has only 1,000 particles per cubic centimetre of volume. For comparison, the general interstellar background has about 1 particle per cc, and a human-compatible atmosphere has 10 million trillion. Technically, there are also superionized gas pockets where the density is lower than 1 per cc, but there's nothing to see there. Literally. Not to be confused with onionized gas pockets, which can usually be seen protesting and chanting slogans. Fact number two. Onionized gas pockets are often found outside kebab shops.
Oh, yes. Yeah, plenty of those. Fact number two. Even though nebulae have a few different types, the basic difference is really just how they're illuminated. The brightest consist of ionized particles, which are emitting their own visible light, as with Barnard's Loop being ionized by the stars within it. Others, such as the Witchhead Nebula, are reflections of nearby starlight, being enough to see it but not to ionize the particles. Where said particles happen to be made of denser, frozen nitrogen and carbon monoxide, they absorb light instead, and we get dark nebulae, such as the Coalsack. Fact number three. Nebulae are formed in several different ways. Emission nebulae, such as the Orion Nebula, are byproducts of stars being formed, which is where enough gas and dust particles collapse under gravity, but the radiation from that process can ionize the leftovers. Conversely, when a star dies, in the sense of running too low on fuel for gravity to hold it together, the explosive expansion can create a glowing shell called a planetary nebula, of which one example is the Helix Nebula. A larger version of that can occur after a massive supernova event, which sends a whole bunch of heavier elements soaring through space and giving us galactic features such as the Crab Nebula. Fact number four. The smallest known nebula at only 0.1 light-years diameter is NGC 7027. It lives along the inner Orion Spur, around 3,500 light-years from the bubble, and it can be found by searching for NGC 7027 in the galaxy map, although the actual star system in the middle is the Wolf-Rayet star BD plus 414004. The Cat's Eye Nebula is also an interesting contender at around 5 light-years across, although the closest you can get to that one is by visiting the Black Hole System BD plus 661066, probably using a fleet carrier to make the distant jump to it. And fact number 5. Several nebulae are actually active star-forming regions, also known as stellar nurseries. Aside from the Orion Nebula close to Barnard's Loop, one of the most notable and largest is the Eagle Nebula, around 7,000 light-years away, containing large towers of gas and dust called the Pillars of Creation, within which stars can form while shielded from stellar winds and radiation. One of the smallest and farthest is the Skull and Crossbones Nebula, so called because it looks like a skull with two glowing eyes, one being the superluminous star HD 64455, and the other a glowing red sphere of hydrogen being ionized by Hafner 19. That's right, some nebula have RGB backlighting. The Skull and Crossbones Nebdot sector, indeed with nebula abbreviated to save exactly two characters, is also the sole cause of some of the longest system names in the entire galaxy map when the coordinates are appended. And that's it. Space facts, lots of space facts that we want to know, that we need to know.
Think from bottom straight to your brain. And that's enough of that.
Well, okay.
Yeah, that was one reason why I kept waffling during the word of the week. I was downloading nebula images to be the background of your section.
So this space facts, I understood more of, I'll be honest, but I still have questions. Some of them are daft. You say it is some of the least dense. I'm assuming it is still not less dense than empty space.
So the what we call empty space there, it varies across the galaxy, but on average, it's one empty space is around one particle per cc. What I said was they're the least dense while still having a visible structure that you can identify.
Fair.
I was just gonna say that third question you've wrote down, you must recite as Holly from Red Dwarf would recite it.
I don't think I've seen it recently enough to do it properly.
On the subject of the density of empty space and the emptiness of empty space and particle per cc for empty space, I had an interesting fact earlier. Dark energy, the amount of energy in vacuum, which is what's considered to be dark energy, is about the equivalent of one proton per cubic meter. So that's million cc's? So that's like 10 to the 6 less dense than hard vacuum.
So, well, a laboratory vacuum was around 10 to the 9 per cc.
Yeah, a lab vacuum is basically atmosphere.
Well, Earth, when I looked it up, Earth atmosphere was 10 to the 19 per cc.
Yeah.
10 to the 18, 10 to the 19, 10 to the 19.
Yeah, it's
lab vacuum was 10 to the 9 per cc. Mm-hmm. Nebulae were between 10 to the 2 and 10 to the 4, so I called it 10 to the 3.
Mm-hmm.
Open space is mostly 10 to the 0 or 1.
Yeah.
And yes, indeed, there are super ionized bubbles, spheres of gas, which can go below that, 10 to the minus 1.
Yeah. Especially if there's been a recent blast of some sort that's giving off a lot of UV or X-rays and pushing everything out of the way. Which is why they're often spherical and bubble-shaped, like the Bubble Nebula.
I did actually look up that one in the Galaxy Map as well. They only had 5 facts I could do, though. So yeah. I'm not allowed to do 6. <you see.
laughs> Anyway.
Yeah, it is quite good. It is a very spherical one, yeah.
Yeah, back to Grey with his next question anyway.
Yeah.
You said the first thing, rather than looking at useful things, why are these pretty pictures not useful?
So, compared to planets on which you can actually land, you know, exoplanets, which will actually do something for us instead of just be dust flying through space and not actually interacting with the spaceship at all, that's not very useful, whereas the planets are.
There is actually another answer to that question as well. There's two types of images that are taken of stellar phenomena and nebulae and things like that. There's the images that are actually useful to scientists and the images that look pretty to put out in the media. And yes, they are not the same things.
No, I imagine you've got useful pictures that can tell you potentially how the gases are moving or adapting or changing or something like that.
They mostly tend to be taken in a very, very, very narrow single wavelength, like the hydrogen alpha wavelength, which tells you about distribution of gases, but gives you a very, very bland monochrome picture. whereas when they take multiple different wavelengths and add false colour and basically use some amount of art to build a pretty picture for people to look at. It's not how they look in space. In fact, it is not possible to see any nebula with the naked eye. Ever. No matter where you are. Even if you were on the far side of the moon and it was dark and you were looking up at the brightest nebulae in the sky, you couldn't see it. You can't. The human eye cannot pick these things up, so they are all false colour, artificial images. Sadly.
You mean Elite is lying to us?
Oh, no. Elite's got special enhancements in the cockpit glass. You're fine.
that also answers your last question, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess it does, because if you're telling me that we can't see normal nebula, we also can't see dark nebulas either.
So the dark nebulas are really just where there should be something emitting light, and you can see the wispy black cloud of carbon monoxide. It's all frozen in front of it. That's it's seeing something dark with a backlight behind it is the way you can see it. That's basically the answer.
A bit like a shadow on an X-ray or something.
And if you were going to say that question in the style of Holly from Red Dwarf, she would say something along the lines of, space is dark. Dark nebula are dark. So how are you supposed to see them?
I was thinking about the Holly thing, and I thought the way would be, so how do you see a dark nebula then?
Yeah, I was thinking that as well. I've paused the slideshow on an image. And if you look at the center sections of that, the black bits,
yeah.
How are you seeing those elements?
Well, you're just telling me it's art and it's painted on, so I'm not sure anymore.
Yeah, but you can see them because they're dark.
An intergalactic lampshade.
Exactly. But yeah, it's literally that. It's when the light of the thing behind it isn't getting to you, so you can see that there's a patch that isn't properly lit.
There you go. So you don't see it, you see the effect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the wind.
Are we back to onion eyes pockets of gas?
It's more like a silhouette. It's you if you've got someone on the horizon and the sun's behind them, and it's not like the sun is projecting this person-shaped black section, which isn't where the sun is. It's that something's in the way, so that's how you see it.
Oh, on the subject of things getting in the way of other things and being able to see them, Amelia, did you see there was a partial lunar eclipse at the weekend?
Definitely not.
Sorry.
Yeah, it was the moon. I actually saw that through a welding mask. It was pretty good. Took a little bite out of the sun.
Yeah, just like it was.
Ah, oh, that's a good idea. I should get a welding mask.
Doing some welding in the near future.
Not for welding, for watching solar eclipses.
Someone over the road was using a pinhole and a sheet of paper. They could do exactly the same thing.
What, weld?
I was about to say something similar.
Oh dear, do we need Flossie to save us with her?
I think maybe we do. Are you ready, Flossie?
I'm ready.
It's Flossie, and the community goes.
Hello, Flossie here with this week's CG News. First, an update on the event which started last week. The Distant Worlds 3 pre-event Shoulder of Orion started successfully last Sunday, and since then 50 systems have been colonised at an amazing speed. One outpost was completed in under a minute. I've been joining in fairly frequently, helping to transport the materials from the fleet carriers to the colonisation ships. Progress was so quick I ended up with a full hold of CMM composites being taken to three different systems before I had the chance to sell them.
On another occasion, I arrived at a new system and saw the message that the colonization ship would arrive in 3, then 2 minutes, and finally imminently. However, there was no sign of it on the system map. I asked other commanders if they could see it, and they all said they couldn't. Then I think one or two could, and it was suggested we all relogged. Upon relogging, many of us still couldn't see it, and a further suggestion was made to change the language on the launcher. I think one of the commanders who could see it must have been using another language. I logged off and opened the launcher, searching for where the language could be and could be changed, and eventually changed it to German. Logged back in, hardly understanding what I was reading. And there was the colonisation ship. So we continued in German for a while until things went back to normal. Anyway, progress has continued well, but now the supplies are dwindling, so it's pausing for now while more supplies are being collected, and a new weekend warrior push will start on Sunday at 1300 UTC. Now, there are two new sieges this week. Support Archer's forces in Chiaridani, or support Patrius' interests in Chiaridani. Imperial agents have been blamed for an outbreak of combat in a federally controlled Chiaridani system. Several incidents have occurred between supporters of Shadow President Jerome Archer and Senator Denton Patrius of the Empire. The former group blames the latter for trying to subvert federal governance of the system. Vox Galactica spoke to a representative for Jerome Archer's power base in Chiaridani. Recent interactions with these Imperial troublemakers have been challenging, to say the least, but we didn't expect them to flood the system in such large numbers. As such, they should be treated as hostile invading force. Patrius' proxy squadrons must be driven out to solidify General Archer's position as the key figurehead of Chiaridani. Archer's power base has called for combat pilots to sign up to the ongoing conflict. Pilots willing to participate can register at Steve Master's Starport in Chiaridani. Pilots who contribute on Archer's behalf will receive credits and a Federal Assault Ship Federation utility paint job. Those who are specifically pledged to Jerome Archer's power will also receive 40,000 merits if the Archer campaign emerges victorious. Vox Galactica also spoke to a representative of the Imperial agents in Chiaridani. Federal political complacency is to blame for growing calls for the Empire's grace. Denton Patrius is a man of honour and discipline, traits the Federation often lacks. We simply intended to demonstrate how effective a strong inspiration can be, but came under attack from Archer's mob. We have the right to defend ourselves. Patrius's power base has called for combat pilots to sign up to the ongoing conflict. Pilots willing to participate can register at the Evanescent Dusk Megaship in Chiaridani. Pilots who contribute on Patrius's behalf will receive credits and an Imperial Eagle Empire Etiquette paint job. Those who are specifically pledged to Denton Patrius's power will also receive 40,000 merits if the Patrius campaign emerges victorious. The two factions have set out week-long operations to establish their positions in the system, which began today, the 3rd of April. To be eligible for rewards, you must sign up as an active participant before handing in combat bonds at Steve Master's Starport or the Evanescent Dusk Megaship in the Chiaridani system. Please note, if you have any crew members, proportion of your combat bonds will be automatically assigned to them. These combat bonds will not count towards your personal contribution total, and your crew will receive the reward for these combat bonds when they are handed in. The proportion of combat bonds assigned to your crew will depend on their rank. Be aware that faction state changes and other disruptive events can negatively impact markets and station services and could prevent the initiative from running smoothly. And that's it for this week's CG News.
Blossy told you what to do.
Well, hey, not only do we have CG News, but it was a big CG News as well. That was a good one.
Yeah.
So are you going to be taking part?
Only if there's ground combat. Mm-hmm. But I'm a bit busy with colonisation, both in distant worlds and my own. So,
yes.
So much to do.
Yeah,
I may have a few million for you know, there's nothing portray us on the way now.
And you know there's nothing to do in
yeah, it's no, a dead
game. I don't do power play, so
no,
that doesn't affect me.
Well, this one, well, I'd imagine it started as a power play conflict, and the system is in power play conflict with the two powers. That's a conflict zone goal.
Right.
Whatever
between
that means.
Two normal, it's a normal conflict. It's a normal war conflict zone between two normal factions, as opposed to a power play conflict zone.
But there are no power play conflicts or conflict goals because of already.
There are
somebody already asked that,
yeah,
and they were told no.
That's right. Yeah, there is such a thing as a power play conflict zone, but indeed this system is absolutely full of normal conflict zones.
Yeah, that's because it's CG.
But if you want to shoot anything, head for Kakari.
Yeah, that's, well, I mean, you can do the CG today, but tomorrow Kakari will light up, that's true.
Yeah, and that's far more important if you're a hunt and trucker. Well, approximately.
Oh, you're taking people away from my CGs.
Don't care about CGs. We don't want to lose Kakari. Harry can't lose his Coke.
Well, you can win Kakari and then do the CG. Because it's only half a week and a week, 1 week, maybe?
That's true.
1 week.
Or get a second commander. Play in one fight, one war with
hey,
one
I've
hand,
already
one
got,
war with the other
is
hand.
Is it five or six?
Play two at once, you're sorted. You got more than one keyboard, we know this.
No, I've only got one keyboard and I share it between two computers.
Hmm. How come you manage to press the button on the wrong keyboard when you push to talking sometimes then? Ha! Got you.
Because I have it switched to my Mac instead of to my PC.
A Mac?
I
just
press the switch.
Boo!
Yes!
Boo!
Yes! My lovely Mac, shut up. Yes, one is on one computer and one is on... And I've pressed the button to get the other computer.
Yeah. Is that your push-to-talk button? So every time you talk, it toggles.
I know.
Sorry.
Sometimes I forget I'm switched to the other computer when I press the talk.
Yeah.
So, of course, it doesn't work.
Mm. Yes, I've had that problem before now as well. Anyway, let's see if we can find something digestive from Beetlejuice and Wotherspoon.
Galnet News Update, 3rd of April, 3311.
With just 5 days to go before the start of early access to their new ship, the Corsair, Guttemeyer has started its marketing drive. For the first 3 months, the supplier of luxury spacecraft to Her Imperial Majesty planned to make the Corsair, Guttemeyer's first made-for-SEO ship, available to relatively wealthy clients in exchange for ARCs. On Tuesday, they hosted a launch party with Princess Aisling Duval, her cousin, Lady Lucretia Roche Duval, and many of the great and good in Imperial society. The Emperor was not in attendance, but the presence of several members of the Imperial family indicates that this new multi-purpose ship has the tacit approval of the throne. Today, Guttemeyer invited journalists to test drive the new ship, a batch of early production run Corsairs sporting the stylish ship kit that will be available as an optional extra at launch was delivered to Jameson Memorial at noon and signed out on loan to accredited representatives of the press. The ship, which will be available to all pilots, including those without Imperial rank, has two seats in the cockpit. It has 3 large and 3 medium hard points, all close to the centre line. It offers an acceptable 4 utility mounts, fewer than many had hoped. The biggest selling point of the Corsair, other than its stylish Roman nose, is its versatility. It has bags of power in its size 7 power plant, even before engineering, with the size 7 distributor making sure you're never short of shields, or a thumpingly fast boost. Talking of speed, the size 7 thrusters won't disappoint, giving the sort of straight line speed that can keep you right behind your target, or boosting clean away if you don't have the time to teach those pirates a lesson. It has the sort of speed you'd expect from the Imperial Courier, but here we have it in a medium frame with all the flexibility that offers. The size 5 frameshift drive is optimised for supercruise overcharge, offering a top speed of more than 4,000 times the speed of light. Its jump range can be tuned to more than 40 light years. There's bags of room inside the Corsair, with 3 size 6 and 3 size 5 optional internals. It doesn't quite have the capacity of the Lacon Type 8, but it can fit 254 tonnes of cargo alongside size 6 shields, or even more if you're willing to compromise on shield strength. It's likely to be popular for urgent courier and source and supply missions. Sadly, it doesn't have the option of a fighter bay, but that's a small price to pay for such a flexible ride. Is it fun to fly? The Corsair's speed and agility make it great fun for boosting through canyons. The Cutter is famous for its terrible handling, but the Corsair has much less drift, more of a big brother to the Courier than the Cutter's younger sibling. Fans of the Clipper might claim the same handling for their ship. On Tuesday, the Imperial Herald spoke highly of the Corsair's sleek curves and good looks. Its styling may be controversial, but the multi-purpose Corsair outperforms many specialist ships in combat, hauling and exploration. It will be available for ARCs from Tuesday the 8th, both in Stellar pre-built and in the standard build-it-yourself configurations. There's speculation that Falcon De Lacy's small multi-purpose ship, the Cobra Mark V, might enter general availability on the same day, but this has not yet been confirmed. At present, the latest variant of the classic Cobra is available only in exchange for ARCs.
In other news, Imperial forces loyal to Senator Denton Petraeus are reported to have invaded the Chi Eridani system. Agents loyal to Petraeus have called for assistance in consolidating their Imperial foothold in this federal system. Shadow President Jerome Archer has called for assistance in driving the Imperial interlopers out. Commanders sympathetic to either side are likely to earn substantial numbers of combat bonds should they choose to take part.
And thank you to Beetlespoon and Wotherjude for that delicious, really tasty
600 speed. I saw 600 in that canyon.
Ooh. Yeah, but who knows if that's real. Could have been fake news. Could have been a deep fake video of it. I mean, it doesn't even exist yet, remember. So how did they get their hands on one?
They said they borrowed it. It was a press release. Were you not listening?
There was an unveiling event. Yeah. So they might have taken it for a joyride, I suppose.
Is this another one where everybody threw the car keys into a bowl?
Rudy, partners like we are, or some of us are.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't know if 600 is the maximum, because who knows how that engineering was. But if it does at least 600 and it's class 7 insofar as it can take a lot of mass, that's a Mamba competitor, because a Mamba laden with weapons does around 600. So.
Mm-hmm. And with class 7 thrusters, it shouldn't really matter what you put on it to some extent.
Yeah.
Or to less of an extent, anyway. We shall find out over the next few weeks, no doubt.
Yeah, certainly three class 3 fragment cannons, a bunch of class 2, that's going to be quite popular here, I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm. So are you queuing up to buy one with ARCs next week when they become available then?
As most with most purchases, I'll see how it is.
Maybe. That's a yes that you don't want to admit to, isn't it? Let's face it.
Yep.
Yeah. I think we've run out of show. I think we finally got there. Yeah.
Already? It's not already? 10 o'clock.
I know. And we started late.
Well, it's 10-ish.
That's true. If we keep waffling for a couple more minutes...
Nah, get a bed early.
Yeah, yeah, sounds fair.
Well, you know, the credits will take a couple more minutes.
That's true, yeah. The show won't finish, but we can all bugger off early anyhow.
Yeah.
I think we definitely should.
Right then.
For the mug!
Journey too long, a cargo too small. Profit margins never really mattered at all. Gonna take the cargo where it's needed today. Super cruising all across the Milky Way. We're taking anything, anytime, anywhere. Loading all the teen out to the brim with the rest for the more.
For the more.
For the more.
For the more.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the more.
For the more.
For the more.
For the more.
Yeah, everybody's seen the trucker's song. Flossie always seems to crash into the sun. Skibble ice, the pilot on the Xbox One. Halving out the free, you know he leads us well. Trucking across the galaxy, now everybody yell. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Everybody's seen the hurting trucker's song. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
You know just where we're coming from. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Everybody's seen the hurting trucker's song. Give me a large path that I can land on, and I'll give you cargo and sing you my song. No point 22 light years to go. Cruising to no journey too long, no cargo too small. The profit margins never really mattered at all. Gonna take the cargo where it's needed today. Super cruising all across the Milky Way. We're taking anything, anytime, anywhere. So shout it out loud, like you don't even care. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the more,
for the more,
for the more. Everybody sing the trucker's song. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the more,
for the more,
for the more. Everybody sing the trucker's song.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of the show. Everyone's buggered off now, so why don't you bugger off too?
Seamless.